some of you here tonight have felt like the Christian life and doing Christianity ends up being just a whole lot of do's and don'ts and, you know, I should do this and I should do that and I should. Anybody felt like that? You know, I should be this, I should pray, you know, Glenn, I see that hand. you know, like you just kind of feel like the whole of the thing is the do's and don'ts. I should be better, I should pray more, I should read my Bible. You know, the guys in the Old Testament had it pretty rough when I was thinking about the do's and don'ts. They even were what they were allowed to eat and what they're not allowed to eat. Found this verse in Deuteronomy. This is about what you're not allowed to eat. It's crazy. Do not eat any detestable thing. These are the animals you may eat. The ox, the sheep, the goat, the deer, the gazelle, the roe deer, whatever. Oh, that's a female deer. The wild goat, the ibex. Does anyone know what an ibex is?
Yeah.
Oh, I do. The antelope and the mountain sheep. You may eat any animal that has a divided hoof and that chews a cud. However, of those that chew the cud or that have a divided hoof, you may not eat the camel, the rabbit, or the hyrax. Although they chew the cud, they do not have a divided hoof. They are ceremonially unclean for you. The pig is also unclean. Although it has a divided hoof, it does not chew the cud. You're not to eat their meat or to touch their carcasses. It's like, flip. There's kind of like the do's and don'ts. Like when you go out to a restaurant, is it, right, which one chooses the cud, which one doesn't, which one has a divided hoof? You know, you have to have pictures, I'd say, in the restaurant, wouldn't they, to keep to the Old Testament. I suppose you're saying, oh, well, Judy, that's all right. That's the Old Testament. And Jesus came and he replaced the Old Testament covenant with a new covenant. And, you know, now we don't have so many do's and don'ts. But I don't know, when you read through the New Testament, there's a whole lot. No. Ephesians 4, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building up and according to their needs. Now, get rid of bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other. How many of us are good at that? Not. Glenn, I see that hand again. Okay. So, you know, like the list of do's and don'ts is quite huge. You know, like you kind of, I think we get into this Christian life and there's a whole lot of shoulds. And you know, you hear it in Christian students and you would have had it in your vital groups and had it at youth group when you came up through a youth group and have it in church services about, you know, don't get drunk and don't lie and don't have sex before marriage and don't gossip and do pray and do go to church and do tithe, do give your money and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like we kind of have taught that. That's been kind of our discipleship program, is how you train people to be a Christian. It's like we asked Jesus into our life one day and had this, you know, decide we're going to be a Christian. And then we spend the rest of our days doing the try hard. You know, we're going to try hard to be a good Christian. Has anyone ever felt like that? Four hands, five, six, maybe a few more. Yeah. You know, it's just kind of, I don't know. I was thinking about this because most of our discipleship programs, you know, things where people become Christians and learn about God, most of it, it's all about what you're allowed to do and what you should do, you know, training people into the how-tos and what you should do, you know. Most discipleship programs have how to have a quiet time, how to live purely, how to read the Bible, you know, how to get into the Bible, how to have the spiritual disciplines. So what about you? Has Christianity been like that, a series of do's and don'ts? And I've got three questions here. They're already up. Do you find that spending consistent time alone consistent time alone each day with the Lord in the Word and in prayer is a difficult duty and not something you enjoy? This is honest, quiet questions to ourselves. Is your spiritual life often dry and routine and boring? I could add there. Are you often defeated by the temptation to sin? Have a think about those questions. You don't need to tell each other. Confession, we're not into confession here. It's a bit scary kind of when you think about those questions. I think, man, I'm a pastor in the church and sometimes I feel a bit like that. It's kind of like. And so my passion at Hills and what I'm doing at Hills is part of this whole thing of formulating and kind of helping people grow and reach their potential in God and this whole thing of discipleship. And I came up last year, you would have heard me, a bit of a vision about discipleship, which is helping people to love all of God with all of them. That's kind of my little thing. So my job is to help people love God with all of them, to love all of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, with all of themselves, so with their mind, their body, and their soul. And that's kind of where I'd got to. And I thought, wow, that's a real cool ministry. And he's looking at my thing, is it echoey? Oh, my necklace. Okay. Don't laugh. All right.
It feels like it's going to move every time I... I wanted to walk around. That's the whole point of the radio mic. Okay, so where was I? So I have this really cool ministry of helping people to love God, because that's what a good pastor does, right? Helps people to love God. And, you know, it sounds quite amazing, and I was getting quite excited about this, except I thought, but how do you do that? Like, actually, how do you help people to love God? And so, and my question is here, can you teach or train and equip a person to love? To love God with their all? And how about you? Where were you trained to love? How did you learn to love? Interesting, I want you to turn to the person next to you 2 minutes, tell them, where did you learn to love? And then swap over. 2 minutes, actually 1 minute. Turn to somebody. Where did you learn to love? Oh, I feel like I'm really loud, Dan. I'm just echoing a bit. Okay. Okay. Right. Where did you learn? Someone yell out. Where did you learn to love? Sorry, parents? Family, I think? Did you learn it at school? No. Macy, it's basically where we were, our family, where we were nurtured, right? So I kind of go, so can you teach someone to love God? Like, I just have been thinged with this question. It's like, how can you teach? And I thought, you know, imagine if I got one of you out here, and I've been thinking about this, who has never met my son Josh, and I've decided it's either Josh or Steve in my group. So which one of you are going to come out here? Josh, just one of them? Josh and Josh. Okay, Josh, this is Josh. Sorry, Josh. So Josh is from the Young Adults Vital Group. Josh, he's very cool. So he's a Josh. So you've never met my son?
No.
Okay. Do you love him? No. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to show you a picture of him. That's him on the left.
Yeah.
Okay. This is when he was really cute. And I'm gonna tell you about him so that you can, you know, I can teach you to love him a little bit. So this is him when he's cute, and that's Bethany, pretty cool little guitarist there. Anyway, but that's all right. So yeah, He's 23. There's another photo of him. I think that's him in New York, maybe. Okay, first day of uni. I can't remember where they are. I just grabbed some off Facebook. So that's him. He's got blonde hair. He's about 6 foot, taller than all of us. You know, I could tell him that he plays the guitar, and he plays the guitar, and he leads worship here. He did before it. He's living in America. So he's been in to see the show Chicago there. He used to perform, bit of a dramatist. What else can I tell you? I think there's one more photo. Yeah, he's spoken here when he preached here, so that's him here. Okay. So I could tell you, Bethany and Alicia, they're his sisters. What could you say about him? They love him. Do you? He's worth loving, eh? He's pretty cool, Alicia? Yes. yeah, these are his cousins. Hi, yeah, his auntie's at the back too tonight. Yay, Alice. Josh is pretty cool, eh? Absolutely, yeah. So he's really amazing. He's this incredible guy. He's got these wonderful attributes. He's 6 foot, and he sings, and he loves God. So do you love him yet? Thank you. You go sit down. I'm just going to embarrass you. So I like, you know, it's kind of, you know, I don't, thank you, Josh. It's Josh, me and Josh. You know, I don't think Josh could love him or get to know him because he's never met him. He's never experienced him. He's never encountered. You know, he can just read. He could read a book of Josh, right? He could look at pictures, but that doesn't mean that he would love him. So how do you help people? And I think it's the same with God. You know, you can hear about him. You can have stories about him. You can hear other people tell their testimonies about him. You can sing songs about him. You can do the whole thing. But if you've never, ever encountered him, experienced him, met him, then it's very difficult to love him. It's just a belief system then. It's like knowing about him but not knowing him. Okay, it's like knowing about God but not knowing him, because this is all about a relationship with God. And I think sometimes we lose it and it becomes a belief system, not a relationship, becomes a religion. You know, it becomes a religion, not a relationship. So if you haven't met God personally or encountered him for himself, then it's definitely over, like the Josh, it's too difficult. It becomes a real try-hard. So this is why Christianity is so cool and so unique. And after every other religion in the world, every other religion is about beliefs, about practices, about what you have to do to get in with the different gods. How every other religion has, you have to earn it. You have to be good enough. You have to try hard. And Christianity is the only religion where God comes to us and meets us and he wants a relationship with us. And I think this, it's so cool. So it's kind of, how do I help people to love God? And I think we're missing something really important. Like I could run courses, I could put on big spiritual programs about how to be a Christian in 10 days or something. We could do conferences, I can teach you how to read the Bible, I can teach you how to try and hear the voice of God and all things like that. And I can have people come into their testimonies. But it doesn't necessarily change people. People aren't transformed. People don't grow. And they can get lots of input and lots of knowledge. And some of us, even after we might have met God once, have put lots of knowledge, lots of input, lots of conferences, read lots of books, but we haven't really grown or got to know or love God anymore because it becomes a cognitive exercise. So I've discovered really in trying to do this discipleship thing that you can't make someone love God. Even if it's commanded in the Bible, it says to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. That's the first and the greatest commandment. It's a command, but I can't make somebody love God. It's kind of huge to think about. And I can't equip people to love God. I can help them in their journey towards him, and once they've met him, I can help them in their love for him, but I can't make anybody love. And I thought, this is so cool. And then I found that the reason why you can't make anyone love is because it's found in the very nature of love itself. And let's read 1 John 9, 10 and 15 and 19. This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Then in verse 15, if anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them and they in God. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love, and whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. We love because he first loved us. We love because he first loved us. The only way we can love God is when we've encountered the God of love, or God's love, and responded to that love. Isn't that amazing? Like, that kind of just blows it all around the thing. We can only love God because he loved us first. We can't love him because he's there. We can only respond to his love and discover how much he loves us, and then we can love him back. So you can't love God without actually encountering and knowing his love first. To know and encounter the love of God and respond to that love. So one of my questions, I've got several tonight, but another one is, have you encountered his love? Not just know about it in your head, but know in your heart and in your spirit. And do you love God because he first loved you? It's all about response to this amazing love of God that he has shown us. It's so amazing, and it gets rid of all this try-hard religion, you know, trying to be good enough, trying to be the best Christian I can and earn his love. Try hard. It's all about earning and being good enough, but when you know how much he loves you, it goes easy. It's the motivator. It's the thing that lifts you up. It's not about, oh, I know I should. Anyway, let me try and illustrate this. Maybe you can get a grasp of it. Who's here been in love? Like really love? Or maybe you don't need to put your hand up. Dan is. Dan's hands are there. You know, for those of you who have been in love, some of you might not be yet, that's all right. True love, like really fallen in love. Think about how you were in the early days, because, you know, we'll be nearly married 30 years next month. And, you know, I'm saying go back to the early days. Remember, honey? Yeah, I know. You know, what were you like with that person? Just think about it. Were they constantly in your thoughts?
Did you keep wondering what they were doing? thinking, what are they doing? What are they thinking? When are you going to see them? Did you doodle their name on a bit of paper while you're at work? Yeah? No? You know, a young guy, or maybe a young girl, I was going to use guys, who's just fallen in love, say, he doesn't think about spending time with his new love as a difficult duty. He doesn't think, I really should spend time with her today, but nah, I think I'll skip it. Can't really be blowed, you know? Why not? You don't do that. You go, because you're so motivated and captivated by this new love. You know, we saw that in Dan. He was round at our place a lot. Hey, Dan. He is motivated and captivated by love. He's constantly thinking of her or texting just to see how she is. You know, sending emoji or whatever it's called with a heart. You know, emoji. You know? Is that what it's called? Oh, yeah, well, you know what I mean. I was thinking that when I wrote it. I thought, that's not right. Thanks, babe. You know, the person who's in love, they rearrange everything else in their schedule to make time to be with that person. And then they go, oh, I'm going to see her tonight. And they start counting the minutes and the seconds, you know? No, love is a powerful force and it literally changes your life. It motivates you in ways that you do not understand. You do things you wouldn't normally do. And love does that. And you don't do it because someone's told you how to behave. You know, you didn't go on a course, those of you who fell in love, who says, teaching you that if you love somebody, this is what you do. You want to spend time with them. You'd like to talk with them and take care of them. You'd like to listen to them a lot. You didn't get taught how to learn all about them and find out what they like or what their family is like. And you weren't taught how to go and tell everybody you knew that you'd fallen in love. You just did it. And that's the same with God and our relationship with him. We love because his love reached us, we encountered his love, and we discovered he was real and that he loved us and he sent his son to die for us, and we respond to him, that we wanted to spend time with him, we wanted to speak to him, we wanted to go and worship him because he's so amazing. It wasn't a try hard because it's a response to love, and there's a difference. You know, sometimes some of us may have come to, you know, joined a church because of friends, and, you know, we've learned about God and heard about him, and we've got to know cognitively in our heads, you know, what he's like. And some of us maybe have, you know, prayed the sinner's prayer, you know, which is inviting Jesus into our life. But, you know, unless you've truly encountered him and know that he's real, it's too hard to keep going your whole life on that. Either he's real or he's not. Either you're in a relationship with him or you're not. It's got to be real. It's got to be out of love. It's got to be deeper than this is a nice belief system I'm going to follow and obey, because that's religion. You need to encounter the love of God. The love of God, but you need to encounter the God of love, because that's who he is. And to love him because he loved you first, not because you're trying to earn it. And that encounter with love needs to be an encounter of love that carries on and on and on and continues. It doesn't just happen once. And this is Paul's heart prayer to the Ephesian church, and it's my heart prayer for each one of you here today. Let me read Ephesians 3:14. So he's talking to you, being rooted and established in love. He's praying that you may have the power, together with all the Lord's holy people, to grasp how wide, how long, how high, how deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. And this is my prayer for you guys here tonight, that you would know this love of God. That you, firstly, being established in love, that's the beginning point, is love, responding to the God's love for you, and that the whole beginning of your faith is on and in love. That's where it starts. And that you would have the power to grasp. And that kind of word, power to grasp, you can't just think yourself into the love of God. You have to, it's a power thing. It means to have the strength to grasp hold of this immense love of Christ. And that this isn't actually easy or a humanly thing. You can't nearly do it in your strength. You need to have that power
of God, which some people kind of call it, to comprehend it. It's not a mental kind of understanding. It's something much more. It's having a picture to take hold of this great love God has for you. And you actually, it's nearly a supernatural thing to have the power of God to be able to comprehend how much God loves you. So comprehending Christ's love requires God's supernatural power, because you just can't naturally discern it. And all of us are on this journey of grasping more and more and more of this great love and actually understanding it greater and greater and greater. And then he goes on this thing about to fully comprehend how wide, how long, how high and deep this love is. And these dimensions that Paul gives are measurements. You know, it's like it's immense, it's unmeasurable, as high, as wide, as east, as west, as heaven is to her, the height or depth, to emphasize this immensity of Christ's love. You can't just understand it. It's always beyond our human understanding to understand the love of Christ's love for us. You know, you can go left or you can go right, you can go forward, backward, up or down, but as far as you can, but you still haven't explored all there is to know of God's love. It's beyond our understanding. And I think sometimes we think we've sorted it. You know, we've got God in a box, we understand his love, but then he's greater than anything we could imagine. He's higher than we can imagine. And we need to allow ourselves to be continuing on a journey of grasping this love, of how much he loves for us, encountering him more and more. And the more you know of God, the more you realize you don't know and you want to know more. And then the more you discover of his love, you realize there's a whole lot more you don't know. And that's the journey. It's kind of like there's more, there's more, there's more. And like, you know, I've been a Christian 30 years-ish, something like that. And there's still more. And by the time I'm another 30 years, you know, I'm still going to be discovering more. There's got to be more. I'm just hungry for more. There's more of God. There's more of his love. There's more of him that I need to understand.
Exactly.
Thank you, Stephen. I like that. And then by the time I'm 95, yeah, about 95, I think would be a good age to pop off. By the time I'm 95, I want to be hungrier and wanting to know more and more and more. There has to be more. There's more of his love, more of him. And I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to go, oh, well, I've got it now. It's all settled. He's in a box. You know, there's more. More of his love. More of his love. You know, I think we just don't grasp this height and depth thing very well. And there's a story of a story in the last century. Napoleon's armies opened a prison after the Spanish Inquisition, and they went in and found a cell that was underground where a prisoner had been. And this prisoner had been put in prison because he was a Christian, because of his faith. And they just found bones, you know, because it was a long time afterwards, the remains. And in the dungeon, and then bones, all they could take, they had one of those metal bracelets around his ankle tied to a wall, and just his bones. But etched in on the side of the cell was he had scratched in a cross. And in Spanish, he had put height, depth, wide, high, deep, wide, and long on it. And even in his suffering, even that same where he died as a believer, and he knew that God's love was higher and wider and longer and deeper than anything he could have experienced. And he left that witness as a testament to his belief on that cell. How much do you know of God's love? How high, how wide, how deep? And I think the cross is the perfect picture of this immense love. Who would die for you? Who would come to earth and die so that you could have this relationship with God? What love. What love. And I think the cross is such a representation of this love that we can see. And then in the verse that we're just finishing with here, Paul says this. He says, to know this love that surpasses knowledge. Okay, to know this love that surpasses knowledge. And this is what Paul was praying for these Ephesians to know. To know the unknowable. To know this love that surpasses knowledge. But the meaning of this kind of gets lost in the English. Because you think, what does that mean? What did you call it, Daniel? Article, something. You could say that's a bit of an interesting title, because it's, I can't remember what you said the word was. Three Daniel, oh, there's three Daniels at the back. Daniel Wellington. You said you called it something. Yeah, yeah, anyway, that's true. That's all right when you saw the title. But, you know, it's kind of, how do you know this, know the unknowable? And to know, paradox, that's the word, that's the one. To know in the Greek, and not that I'm a scholar, but I looked it up, is this word, and it's become my little favourite word, okay? It's called gnosko. How about you say that? Gnosko, okay? It means to know. And this is this word gnosko is the basic meaning of gnosko is to know by experience. It involves experiential knowledge, not just the accumulation of known facts. So you need facts, you need knowledge, but gnosko means you need to experience and encounter. And so it's to know the unknowable, and the unknowable is the mental side, that word, but to know is a word to actually more than just our head cognitive. When we're in the Western world, it's all about proof, science, learning, logic. This is not what the Greeks were talking about. It was to know by experience. And it speaks of knowledge that goes beyond merely factual and into the realm of this experiential. This is one of the things in the studies, one of the scholars says, Christianity is to be felt because it's about a relationship. It's not a brain exercise. So also the word gnosko was used in the, gnosko, I think it's a really cool word, sorry, it's my little favourite here. Gnosko is also a word used in the Old and the New Testament for when they were describing a relationship between a husband and wife, and actually sexual relations was called the word to know. And, you know, in the, when Joseph did not consummate his marriage with Mary when she was pregnant, the King James says, he knew her not until she gave birth. So this knowing, and Adam and Eve, he said, and Adam knew Eve and gave birth to Cain. So it's that intimacy, it's that relationship, and that to know is the same word that's used here. To know, it's not just a, I know you, it's I know you, kind of on a, on a deeper level, you know? You know. So to know or gnosko, the love of God, is to know about it, to understand it, but to encounter his love as well. It's all of the knowledge stuff, but it's also the feeling, the sensing, the intimacy. It's hearing him speak. It's not just head knowledge. You need both. And to know this love, to know this love, but to know that you know that you know that you know his love. We often say that too in, you know, couples getting engaged, you know, got to know that you know that you know, you know, you know, you know. It's not. Just, oh yeah, that, yeah. I know. I love them. No, you've got to know. And the same with our God, that you have to know his love. Know that he is more than just a good idea some religion had and a good belief system. You have to know him, a relationship with him. That's what this whole thing's about. That's why we worship, because we love him and we want to give him our honour and our praise. So Christ's love is beyond our brains, our intellect, our understanding. It's so much more. It's so much bigger. It's vast and incomprehensible and ultimately immeasurable. And this is my prayer, that you would gnosko this love and be filled with the fullness of God, as knowing Christ's love also results in that spiritual maturity, which is what our discipleship's about. As you know him, as you learn more, you grow more. And that's that fullness of Christ, which is at the end of that verse. But I'm not going to go into that more yet. So no teaching or book or course or cool sermon can give you that. You know, it's a supernatural thing when you encounter the living God and you encounter his love. You know, and that's why, you know, when you think about the people who are being martyred overseas, you know, people who are dying, you know, are being shot or hung or their heads chopped off, because of God. They know God's real. They didn't sit there with a nice idea that God's real and, yeah, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to stand up for my faith. They know him. They hear his voice. They see him. They see in the spirit. They stand in those moments when they're being persecuted and go, I know my God and I know where I'm going, and so I don't care. Where people who just have it as a religion or a belief system, you know, in Western now, little New Zealand, we don't ever get, you know, it pushed to the shove cut edge where we have to make that kind of decision. We kind of maybe hide it from our friends because we don't want to seem cool. Or where did you go on the weekend? You don't say you went to church. Do you know what I mean? Like, we don't have to know that we know that we know, because it's just a nice belief system. But the challenge is that God has so much love for us that he wants us to know that love, respond to that love, and to continue to respond and to continue to go deeper in that. So when you know this love of God, when you've encountered it, you want to know more about him. You want to talk to him. You want to pray. You want to be with people who love him. You want to worship him. You want to read the word. You want to discover more. You know, I'm not saying you like that all the time. There's ups and downs, you know, and we do go through times of dry hair, but basically we want to know him more. And, you know, ultimately we want to tell everybody about him. You know, I think that's a really good sign, especially your loved ones. You want to tell them about this God because it's so amazing and it's so challenged and changed your life that you want to tell others about him. That's ultimately shows sometimes the depths of our love. And, I'm really challenged on that myself because it's easy to kind of have this quiet sort of thing. But, hey, if this God is real and his love's available to everyone, we want everybody to know that and discover that. So my prayer has been tonight that this whole thing of knowing God is responding to his love, and it's about relationship, and that you've been challenged to think about where you're at with this relationship with the God of love, and that this love will bring the transformation in your life and you'll want to fully go after him more and more because of love, not because of try-hard religion. You know, some people have started this way with a bit of a hype and suddenly kind of lost it. And you think, gosh, how did I get down here? Because I did encounter that love. But, you know, I've kind of drifted a bit. And I believe God continually stands there calling and drawing you back to the cross, back to his feet, back to come and encounter that love afresh. And maybe that's you tonight, and maybe there's a God's done a bit of a stir up and say, yeah, that you lost your first love. You know, it says in Revelation, you know, you were once really hot and on fire for me, but now it's got a bit kind of smelled at life and its circumstances, and he wants you to be drawn back to love. Not that, oh, I've got to try hard, yeah, I better go pray. Yeah, I better read my Bible today. That would be a good idea. No, it's about responding to his love, saying, Father, I'm sorry, turning and saying, drifted away from you in our relationship. I want to know you more. Speak to me. Let me hear your voice. Let me read your word. May I hear you speak to me and draw you back. We need to keep going, keep learning, keep exploring, keep going after more. So what I'm going to do tonight, just with ending, I'm going to do something a bit different.
No.
It's all good. Dan's going to get ready, this Dan, cool, it's called a soaking chat with Graham Cook, and it's just 3 minutes actually, and then the team's going to come up and play a song in response, but this is just listening. Graham Cook just speaks as if he's God, that's not quite what I mean, but he's speaking scripture and prophetic scripture and just the truth about who you are and him and about this love. And I was going to get you to lie down on the ground, but some people may not be comfortable. But maybe just where if you can close your eyes for 3 minutes and just not be distracted by the people and just listen to these words. And then I'm going to get the worship team to come up. And then if we're going to have a worship response. And if you feel like, wow, yeah, I just need more of this love. I need to encounter the God of love. If you'd like some prayer, we're just going to have some of us about the front love to pray with you. That you want to, if you've been challenged tonight, that actually there's more, and I've kind of drifted back, or gosh, I've never really encountered this God that she's talking about. Then we'd love to pray for you and love for you to come up the front during the worship. So, but just for these, I think it's only a 3 minute little bit I've pulled out. So just if you just close your eyes, and thanks, Dan, if we can just put that on.